Welcome to the Marshall Pro Podcast. This episode, we have my old friend Joey Hand, defending winner of the 24 Hours of Le Mans in his Ford GT. Bit of a change-up this year for Joey and the team, at least in the number 68 car. Sebastian Bourdais' injury qualifying for the Indy 500. Tony Kanaan's been drafted in, so good old TK is going to get to do his very first 24 Hours of Le Mans, and will also be there with his dear friend Rubens Barrichello, who's racing in P2, who'll be making his debut as well. Spoke with Joey about the defense, about these changes, about what it's like having to welcome in somebody, really try and create a new well-oiled machine with himself and teammate Dirk Mueller. Also Joey, because he's a good guy and he's pretty darn funny. Opened up talking about what he did with his trophy after winning last year. Then got into some other fun stuff too about him, frankly transforming his image. Not as if it needed a transformation because of lack of talent or lack of performance, but he was a guy who had the really big crash at Mid-Ohio in the Grand Am race and went barreling through the air, and that was kind of who he was, who folks regarded him as for many years. And it's just cool to see someone who got stuck in that, really his perception was of the guy spinning through the air. Cool to see him turn that around to become a guy who is champion, Sebring winner, just winner of you name it, winner of so many things now. So anyways, if you know Joey, you probably love him too. Guy's just a lot of fun, very Californian, and you get that Northern California dialect, which actually also sounds a little bit Southern California the way that Joey speaks it. But anyways, good stuff with Joey going into this weekend's 24 Hours of Le Mans, where he will be defending the GTE Pro victory with his teammates, Ford's four-car assault. Also, we have the 50th anniversary of Dan Gurney and AJ Foyt winning in their Ford GT40. So, fairly magical. They won last year on the 50th anniversary of Ford's first win. Let's see if they can win two in a row on the 50th anniversary of the Big Eagle and Supertex getting the job done. All right, well, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes and on our Facebook page, Marshall Pruitt Podcast. With that piece of work done, off we go with Joey Hand.
It's your fault for winning the damn race, Hand. I mean, if you were smart, you kind of got to weigh things. You go, okay, Le Mans winner or guy that's going to be hassled with a lot of idiots like me asking questions and wanting interviews. I'm not sure if you made the right decision, but...
I always got to weigh out choices, man.
On that similar vague topic, where do you have your trophy? Like, where did you build something in the Hand compound? Or, is it sitting on top of the TV? Do you put your right keys in it when you come home? Where's the...
I have it on a shelf with a bunch of other ones. Let me send you a picture.
Star Mazda trophies are next to it? That'd be so awesome if that was the case.
Well, I'm going to send you a picture of what it looks like. So there are Star Mazda trophies involved. Looks like there's a Pony Challenge VIR. There's an IKF Grand National Duffy. It's pinned between a Duffy and a 12-hour winner. So,
I love that, though, right? I mean, it's obviously an amazing win, and it's all the things we know that it is. But it sits among, other important milestones in your career, so that's kind of baller.
Yeah, I think it's right in there. And by the way, now that I look at it, there is a former Mazda trophy right behind it. from my one win in 98 at Pikes Peak, and when I was privateering it, and that win is what got Kent Stacy to give me a shot at his deal, which turned into my winning the Mazda championship, which turned into my free test at BMW at PTG with Tom Milner, which turned into what we're talking about here.
Wow.
Probably.
That's awesome.
Yeah, kind of cool.
Well, let's start with maybe a little bit of a weird left turn while we're on the topic of going back to Le Mans to defend your GTE Pro win. So, speaking of the PTG BMW days, there were many years of your life, man, where you were the Mid-Ohio crash highlight reel guy. And that's kind of all you were, as some people were convinced. Oh my God, you survived. How are you? Are you okay? Oh my, what was it like? Tell me about it. That must be a bit of a strange realization to know that this one dumb crash and flip and, ABC Wide World of Sports type notoriety that came from this mid-2000s crash at Mid-Ohio, that was kind of who folks thought you were or what you were known for so long. I imagine it has to be kind of cool and a little bit surreal to realize that, yeah, people don't really ask me about that too much anymore. It tends to be the big victories we've gotten and, you know, this little thing we did with Ford last year.
It is interesting, man, because there was a lot of talk about that. But, you know, it's crazy how things work out because that actually turned some heads of people, like, to know who I was. Like, oh, wait, that's the guy. That guy's the guy that wrecked it in Ohio. Holy cow, that's pretty crazy. Oh, he wins too? Oh, cool. It was really interesting how much that came up. Obviously, people just talking about it from, like, the ultimate wreck standpoint. But, you know, I never forget that I did that race, you know, and that was, like, kind of a one. I was doing one-offs with driving with Chris Gleason in that car, and that was a Connolly car,
yeah.
Matt Connolly car. And the next race was Sears Point, all right? And after that Mid-Ohio week, and he asked me back again to drive with another guy, not Gleason, some other guy. And I came back, and it was obviously in a different car. It wasn't that car that I wrecked in Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, and, the short wheelbase BMW wasn't going to be the hot ticket at Sears.
Yeah. I did that race, and the guy I drove with got way back, and I fought my way through and drove up to the front a couple times for some reason. I can't remember what the situation was, but Max Crawford and the Crawford group, you know, they were watching, just happened to see and said, that's a guy that just had that huge one at Ohio and whatever, and just thought, well, I'm going to give him a try, and ended up giving me a shot in one of his cars, a test at VIR, that was basically from thinking of me from that wreck at Mid-Ohio, which then kind of turned into, you know, Alex Drobe and, you know, me and Bill driving Alex Drobe and all this thing. It was just crazy. Like, that kind of, even the wreck kind of worked out for me, believe it or not, in a good way. I mean, I survived it, first of all, but then some people really, it opened some people's eyes to, that's the guy that wrecked. Okay, that got my name in their head. And then, you know, coming up after that, I started winning a few races. I was winning some stuff in Continental Challenge with Turner, you know, and it just kind of spiraled, and people were talking about it. So, you know, it's sometimes they say any press is good press. Well, nowadays we know that's not true. But in this case, you know, that wreck and surviving it did actually make me more of a household name with people. And still to this day, man, I mean, I swear, at least once a week, I feel the question about that wreck.
Wow.
Even from all different sorts of people.
I'm hoping you're telling people that you actually always wanted to be an Olympic gymnast, and so you figured this was a really cool way to check it out, and you decided to stick with racing.
There's so much to the story. We don't need to get into that, but, you know, the whole fire truck and cutting my clothes off and, you know, all that. Fighting turtle and everything. It's a whole story.
Oh, Lord. Well, I have to imagine you were, if not watching it when it happened, you were certainly alerted fairly quickly after our friend Sebastian Bourdais had his really frightening crash in qualifying for Indianapolis, beyond the thoughts of your teammate, you know, friend, someone you won Le Mans with last year, were hoping to repeat that feat this year. Once you knew he was okay, but once you learned that, you know, he's going to be down for a while, what goes through your mind? You guys had pretty awesome chemistry, and you know how chemistry is often that ingredient that you can't necessarily buy or define, but it really does make a big difference in whether you can succeed.
You know, I saw the wreck. I knew it was a bad one. But you start hearing things between, you know, what happened, and they took him to the hospital, whatever. So, but quickly you start to figure out that, you know, he broke some stuff, and then you start to think, well, we're only 2 weeks away from Le Mans. I don't. You have something broke. It's probably not going to heal that fast, you know, no matter what it is. So, I immediately started thinking in my mind, like, who can we use? And you know, it didn't take but a minute for me to think about Tony, because he'd been in the car at Daytona for a bunch of laps in one of the sister cars, you know. All he'd have to do is learn Le Mans, as long as they'd let him do it, was my question. Like, can we sub to him? Will they let him do it? And, you know, Dixon went last year and didn't ever drive a lap on the track till the race week either, you know. So right away I thought Kanaan was the right guy. I've driven with him personally. You know, we did that race at Indy together back in the day, and I know, you know, we're around each other a lot, so he's a fun dude. He's easy going. He can wheel with the best of them. So right away for me, that was no brainer. I texted OG and said, hey, we might need to think about TK, and he said, already thinking about it. And you know, I mean, quickly, I mean, you don't want to sound like you don't care, but about Seabass, but we kind of knew we had to make some moves kind of quickly if he was broken. You know, everybody was kind of thinking about it while we were thinking Seabass is all right. So I actually called Sebastian the next day, the next night, just to leave a message on his phone, because I just felt like I wanted to, so he could hear my voice when he checked his messages instead of texting him, and he answered.
And was he all cracked out on pain meds or
no? That was crazy. He wasn't. He's like, I had so actually this would have been it wasn't no so it wasn't Monday it was Tuesday I called him or no it was Monday the record was on Saturday so he had Sunday he had had surgery 5 hours after the wreck, so that would have been into Sunday morning, right? So it was Monday I called him. So he was like, totally like, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, what? What? I wasn't expecting an answer, first of all. And if he did, I thought he was going to be like groggy and like, hey, dude, No. He's like, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, Seabass? Is that you? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, how you doing? He's like, oh, I'm doing pretty good, surprisingly. I'm like, okay. He's like, sorry, man. He's like, sorry, man. I'm not gonna be able to do the mom. I'm like, hey, dude, you don't have to be sorry to me, man. I was like, I was glad to see you moving in that after that wreck. I told him I was watching it live and all. He's like, yeah. He's like, that definitely hurt. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I bet it did. And he just told me about his pelvis and his hip and all that. And so, but I was just really surprised at how quickly he was already up and running. And you know, since then, I mean, you see all the things. He's full on, like, you know, physical therapy and all that. He's moving pretty quick. I mean, yeah, at the rate he's going, I wouldn't be surprised if he drives again this year, you know, for sure. I mean, he's totally moving really quick. So, but yeah, you know, I mean, moving forward the next couple of days, we're all just talking about, you know, can the TK thing work out, and what do we need to do? And those guys were obviously in touch with FIA, CO, whatever he needed to do on that end. And so, yeah, ultimately, we're like, yeah, that's definitely the best choice, you know. So, for us, you know, I mean, we've had a good time with Seabass. You know, you start to get to know somebody. I mean, you've been our teammate for a year and a half now, you know. So, different than most third drivers, he's had a lot of tests with us as far as, like, you know, he got a lot of laps in the car at Sebring, Daytona at the beginning of last year before we even did the, you know, first long race with the car. He was in a lot of tests because he lived in Florida. He'd just drive over and hang out or whatever. So he's got a lot of time in the car. He's got a lot of time with the team. So he's like one of our guys, even though he's not even a Ganassi guy necessarily for the IndyCar side. He's one of our guys. And so we'll definitely miss him. You know, that also that French connection was fun last year during the parade because he's so well known and liked over there.
I was going to say, you've kind of lost your personal translator. Now, granted, Tony will hook you up on Portuguese if needed. I just don't know how much that's going to come into play in Le Mans.
Well, and we had this whole thing planned for Bourdais to try and teach me how to speak French, which, let me tell you what, would have been hilarious on a YouTube channel, because you could make a whole show of it. Because I don't know what it is about foreign languages, but I can only speak California, it seems.
Yes, same here.
It just doesn't sink in, man. So they thought it was hilarious he was trying to teach me some word last year. He's like, no. We had this whole car ride. He was actually getting mad at me. Like, no, it's not how you say it. And our PR people were thought, this is a they were like, this is a great idea. We definitely need to do this again.
I got so, France. I can do France. Anything beyond the word France, we got problems.
Oh yeah, I'm in a mess of trouble. But yeah, we'll miss him. We'll miss him for sure. But you know, we're happy we got the times we did. You know, we'll get him back in the car later. But you know, we won Le Mans together. We won Daytona together. I mean, it's. Let's give Tony a chance. Let's win something with Tony, you know?
I know, that guy hasn't had much success in his career. We need to kind of prop him up at the...
He's only won the Indy 500. I mean, geez, we need to get him some big wins here.
So kidding aside, what do you think, or have you put any thought into, all right, well, Tony's coming in. He's a baller. I mean, this guy's, you know, done lots of endurance races, won endurance races, kicked ass back in the Acura days, you know, the P2 days in the ALMS. Obviously, you know, success in Daytona prototypes. But from a guy who's been to Le Mans now a couple times, you know that place is very specific. You know, when you were there for your first time, I remember speaking afterwards, you're like, man, that's a lot to digest. It's going to help me when I come back, but it's a little hard to get it all and then master it, you know, first time out. You put any thought into, all right, well, is there anything I can tell Tony or help him or, you know, a track walk or whatever it is that might download and accelerate that learning curve for him?
Oh, man, we're definitely going to be doing that for him because Le Mans is special. I mean, I remember talking to you about it after I did it in 2011. I needed a full mental recovery day, which is unusual for me. After that 2011 race, I was like, whoa, this is not just your average 24-hour race. You know, it's not the same as any other race. It's, you know, it's only three drivers for sure. And the track is just super demanding mentally because of the speed of the corners and the night and the lights, no lights there, and, you know, the rain here and there and all that. Just, it's just different. I mean, I'll definitely express that to him. Again, I'm talking to Tony Kanaan, somebody who's been driving in IndyCars since before I even drove a race car, basically. So, I mean, I'm not going to tell him everything, but I think we can help him accelerate the curve for sure. And just, you know, be ready for him. I mean, I think the big thing about Le Mans really is learning the new rules. You know, it's very specific, like safety car rules and slow zones and stuff like that. And that's the place that you can get it wrong so quickly. You know, I mean, you can do all these fast laps and, you know, let's just say you're 2/10 quicker a lap for a session, and then you miss a slow zone by 2 feet too deep into a slow zone, 80K, and you get a drive-through penalty, which costs you 3 minutes or whatever, a couple minutes, and forget about it. So I think there needs to be, you know, from my end, what I'm going to talk to them about a lot is just, you know, what we learned last year with the slow zones and where it's necessary to be quick, where it's not necessary to be quick in and out of them and that kind of stuff, you know. But, you know, fortunately for us, he's a great wheel man. And I think for him, we have a lot of experience. Well, we have a whole year's of experience with all that stuff that we can coach him through it, you know. So from the track side, I mean, he's driven a lot of great racetracks in this world. So I think he'll switch on to it really quick. That's why we're excited to use him. I think personally, I think it's easier to be learning a track in a car that you know, rather than having a guy that knows Le Mans in a car he doesn't know.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So you could find a Le Mans guy or a Le Mans specialist or somebody who's been there a bunch, but if he hasn't driven the car, then I think that's harder. I think the comfort in the car is a much better side to have, because, you know, I mean, race car drivers, pretty much three laps and you got the track figured out. Have you mastered it? Probably not, but in three laps you got to figure it out enough to run pretty good laps.
Let's close on what's coming up here in the race, and BOP is something that I get tired of. I know you can't, you know, it's something that makes a lot of us just fall asleep or want to jump off buildings. If we look at the test day, you know, there is one kind of big glaring thing to come out of it. It's the two brands that fought each other tooth and nail last year for the win. Well, you guys are neck and neck. You're close coming out of the test day. just not necessarily one and two on the speed charts, when you at least look at what's coming ahead in the race and what you have to do over 24 hours. You know, you don't set the technical regulations. You know, nobody in the paddock does that. You have to go out there and race what you are given. Did you come out of the test day saying, all right, lap times, whatever they were for us and whatever they were for, you know, some of the other cars, this is all we got. You know, we're stuck where we are. Or was there any feeling of like, okay, it was test day, we learned some stuff, but I think we come back for the race. You know, we should be able to give folks more hope that we can be in the fight than maybe some had coming out of the test day.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, you know, what everybody's doing, you know, what everybody's running for tires and things like that. I think that's a couple of the variables, or at least one of the variables is, you know, who's running what tires and things like that. But, I mean, the thing that I was happy with from the test, I wasn't happy with being whatever, second to last or third to last or whatever we were, you know. But I was happy with the comfort of the car. You know, I mean, there's only so much you can do. Yeah, I can only stand on throttle, full throttle down the straightaways and all that, you know. But, you know, I think the big thing about Le Mans is what we've been talking about basically is comfort level. And, you know, we were trying to focus on the cornering stuff, you know, try and make the car as good as we can through the corners.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely the you know, it's no secret the BOP is different. Like from what we raced last year to this year is definitely different for us, you know, more weight, less boost. So, I mean, there's no question that it's going to be different last year. So our main goal from our side, like within the team, like engineering with John Hennick and me and Dirk, was to try and build that comfort level in that can allow you to do it for the long run without any mistakes, you know, because if you're not the quickest car, or if you are the quickest car, it doesn't matter necessarily, but if you're not the quickest car, the one thing you can do is be mistake-free and do it better than everybody else in the long run, you know. You see that all the time at Le Mans, but you saw it last year. Like, I mean, we had four cars in the fight, and, you know, it came down to who had the least amount of time in the pit lane, or, you know, mistakes or something go wrong or whatever, you know. And that was our car, you know. We just had one little issue with the steering wheel, and otherwise we were just clear sailing, you know. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest things. I mean, I had, you know, I felt like we were a little bit more comfortable in the brake zones and things like that. The car was a little more situated. You know, we were trying to just work on those things and make the car, you know, go the distance, and not have to like fight it so much, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to get there and be, you know, have the car super super free in like Indianapolis, say, or the Porsche curves, and fight that for, you know, 24 hours on the verge of making a mistake, and then go off and lose everything just because of that, you know. So, I mean, I learned that 2011. We were trying to, you know, make up things by running all trimmed out, and the thing was just like it was so hard to drive. It was easy to make mistakes, you know. So you got the way the system works at Le Mans now. I mean, I'm not telling you anything, but I'm telling you. I mean, it's you can't have that. You can't, if you lose a minute, you got to race a minute back. You know, so you can't. You don't want to come down the pit lane with a drive-through because there's no safety car that's going to save you, right? Like, that's the thing we always got to remember. It's, we're not racing in the U.S. on the U.S. system where, okay, we can get 30 minutes back, I mean, 30 seconds back in the U.S., and the safety car comes out, you're bunched right back up. You know, that's, it's not going to happen at Le Mans. Le Mans, you hold station 1 minute behind, and then you got to go get that lap time. So we don't want to be doing that. We want to try and focus on making the car go consistently, and build as much comfort into, so from a driver standpoint, drive it hard for 24 hours. That's what our goal is.
And I guess that's maybe a good closing question. You live for the fight. I mean, you love, that's one of the things why I think folks have responded to you so heavily over the years. You love what you do. You're the guy who's smiling and cannot wait to get in the car and go throw some bows with whomever, you're racing against. Last year, obviously, the Fords were incredibly quick the entire time. Wonderful result, huge, huge win. This year definitely looks like, unless we get a, another pre-race day before the race, BOP change, looks like you're definitely gonna have to knuckle up, get those elbows ready again. You love that, knowing that, look, anything we earn this year is probably gonna be a result of flawless performances, but a lot of red mist and a lot of passion for fighting.
Yeah, I think that's. I think I do love that. To answer your question, I mean, you know me. I do love that. I love the racing. I mean, as a racer, you always, you if when your job is to win races, you love if you can just drive off into the sunset and win it walking away. I mean, clearly, I love that also. But I definitely am the guy that loves the actual racing part, the battle, the mental strategy, the mental warfare, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I love that part of racing, the back and forth. I mean, I think, last year we had it went really well for us. We did some dogfight. I was in some dogfighting with Wielander for sure, early on, and then with the Ferrari late again. But I think this year just is shaping up to be, I think there's gonna be a lot of cars in the fight, like no matter how it plays out, whether it's at the end of the race or the beginning of the race or whatever, I think it's just gonna be a lot of cars going after it. But yeah, I mean, I'll be willing to get in there. I mean, I'm the guy that definitely wants to do it. It's just, you know how it is with a 24-hour race. We're not gonna be trying to do that from the first hour. I mean, it's all gonna be about, thinking about positioning yourself. If you got to go fight for the win in those last couple hours, I mean, keeping the car clean, not busting stuff up on curbs and things like that is going to be the name of the game. Because I mean, you could be off the pace and be running fourth or fifth throughout the race and be the last one standing, ultimately. It doesn't matter where you are, because we saw last year cars can fail and fall out of the race any moment, so but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think we got, from our car standpoint, the 68 car, me and Dirk, and now Tony, I mean, having a win under your belt, like winning the race last year in the 50 anniversary, to the day, that was kind of the plan. That's what Ford wanted to do. That's what the car was built for, was to come race and win Le Mans. And to have that get sorted in the first try, is definitely, I would say for sure, there's definitely less pressure on myself. We feel like if we win it again, that's great. It'd be like the icing on the cake, the cherry on top, you know what I mean? So I feel like we can just kind of go for it and just let it play out, no stress. So right now, it's a good feeling going into the race from that standpoint.
Well, I still think you need to feed someone a wheel on the parade lap just to show you mean business, I mean, come on now.
Like my go-kart days. That's what I used to do in go-karts. I just feed him a wheel, point at him like I'm already angry, and they'd be like, "I don't even know what he's talking about. Why is he so mad?" And then all of a sudden, they don't even know what they're thinking about. They're thinking about me being angry and mad, and they forget to do the start.
And that was my boy Joey Hand. Always a blast speaking with him. Cool also seeing him last year. Happened to be staying in the same hotel to fly out the following morning. Strolled in with my bags, and there he was with his trophy, trying to help his friend Dirk get a hotel room. So anyway, it's just neat to see someone, somewhat of a local boy, but boy done good, who has really gone about as far as he can in his sport and is now just trying to add more accolades. All right, well, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is a Marshall Pruitt podcast. Thanks for listening.